Hello, world. Welcome to Travels Inside Podland. This is Nikki, and I'll be your host on this 30-minute whirlwind trip around the world to visit some of Side Podcast community members. In the next bit, we'll hit at least 4 continents and hear from folk from places the likes of New Zealand, the Philippines, France, the UK, and Canada. Time's short and our plane is leaving, so let's go.
Hi, this is Amy, and I'm from Dunedin, New Zealand. Dunedin has a population of around 120,000, but it's a university city, so when the 20,000 or so students leave each summer, the place is pretty dead. Despite this, I'd recommend visiting in the summer because the winters are really cold. Dunedin is quite popular with tourists who seem to enjoy the long drive out Otago Peninsula to check out the wildlife, the albatross colony being the biggest draw card. I'm not sure why birds are interesting, but the visitor numbers tell me that I'm wrong. If you take the drive, just be sure not to crash into the harbour. Another popular visitor attraction is Larnach Castle, but I would give it a miss. It's not even a proper castle, it's just a really big old house. While you are in town, be sure to check out the Spates Brewery Tour because it is the greatest beer in the country, and who doesn't like beer? Another must-see tour is the Cadbury Factory, where you will find Cadbury World, which is one of only 2 in the world. If you have the time, drive the 110 kilometres up the road to the town of Oamaru. I may be biased because it's where I spent my childhood, but it's a really lovely wee town. It has the most impressive amount in the country of historical buildings, although if you come from a country with a bit more history, you might not find anything impressive about buildings that are only 150 years old. Most of the country demolished their old buildings a long time ago, so you really don't see entire streets of buildings that look like they've stepped out of the 1800s anywhere else. The people who work in that part of town really get into it, and they dress up in old clothes and stuff as well, and they ride penny farthings around, and it's really fantastic. To end this little travel trip, Oamaru also has penguins, little tiny penguins, and they're really cute, so check them out.
Hi guys, just me here, Gavin, not me as in me, but me as in Gavin. Yeah, so come to Wellington for a holiday, it's pretty awesome. If you're flying to New Zealand, which most of you will be, you'll have to fly into Auckland or Christchurch first and then take another plane to Wellington where you will arrive at the airport. The airport's slightly out of town, so my first tip is when you're driving into town, tell the taxi driver to just drive along the coast because there's a nice coastal route and, you know, full of little bays and houses on the hill, and it's really quite cool. And then once you've arrived at where you're staying, I'd suggest walking around town. There's a nice shopping street called Lambton Quay where it's got all the high street shops, and you can walk past the House of Parliament and some nice little landmarks there, and then walk along the waterfront as well, and you'll reach Cotswold called the Michael Fowler Centre, which is quite nice too, a nice building, and you'll see some nice views, and you'll see a boathouse, and maybe buy an Italian ice cream or hire a pair of rollerblades or whatever takes your fancy. In town itself, actually on the coast still, is a museum called Te Papa, which is the National Museum of New Zealand. It's very big, 6 floors, it's got loads of Kiwi stuff in it, and it's got stuff like go on adventure rides and things and look at things like awesome forces, which is like geology and volcanoes and earthquakes and things. It's really cool with an earthquake simulator and stuff. Or you can look at New Zealand art, look at the settlers, the ones that first arrived in the cramped conditions and stuff. So that's pretty cool. And then you probably get hungry at this point, so walk on to Courtney Place where there's plenty of nice bars and restaurants. It's the entertainment part of town. It's really cool. You can have anything you want. Lots of Asian food, Italian, Greek, kebabs, French. There's new restaurants all the time. It's always exciting. It's good value for money too. From there, take a bus up to a place called Mount Victoria. It's not technically a mountain, though. It's quite a steep hill. I wouldn't walk up it. You can go up to the top and there's a really, really awesome, awesome viewpoint, and you can see the whole city from up there. It's a 360 panorama. You can see from the airport to the Hutton Valley. You can see all through the city. You can see everything, and you can see for miles, and it's fantastic. After that, you're probably going towards the end of your day now, so go back into town, maybe grab something to eat, and you can go for some of the lovely entertainment, such as there's loads of nice bars and clubs on Courtney Place. You could go to the theatre. We have lots of theatre in Wellington, lots of nice little plays and Shakespeare and all that sort of stuff if that's your thing. Or we have a massive movie complex with 10 cinemas and IMAX and cool sound and lovely lazy boy chairs. You could do that too. Or just have a cruise around town if you're so inclined. There's lots of like car cruises and things like that, so that's cool. So you could do that and all in one day pretty much. And then the second day you could go up north, sort of out where I live, around up there. Plimerton's got a nice beach, really nice flat sand and fish and chip shops, and really cool. And then further north, near a place which has got a strange name called Paraparumu, don't ask me to spell it, there's a cool car museum called the Southwoods Car Museum. It's got loads of old cars, from the veteran cars of Model T, Ferraris, race cars. It's got a gangster car, it's got a DeLorean. It's got a Mercedes Gullwing. It's even got an old Formula One car in there, I think. And that's pretty awesome. And loads of bikes and things. So you could do that. And then you could continue up the coast to a place called Lindale, which is like a farm shop where you can buy honey, lollies, ice cream, chocolate, have a helicopter ride, pet the goats, that sort of thing. Yeah, so you could do that sort of thing. The very touristy things. Although, for me, what did I do when I was there? Well, I used to go into town a lot, go shopping, drink a coffee at a cafe, go and eat something, or even go go-karting. There's temping bowling. So there's loads of nice things to do, and you could easily spend a few days there. And you could even combine it by going back into town at the end of your trip and taking a ferry called the Enter Islander, which takes you to the South Island, and it's one of the best ferry trips in the world. It's absolutely beautiful, particularly the entrance into the Marlborough Sound is absolutely fantastic. The only thing you can think is similar is like somewhere like Norway, where it's just a big fjord and loads of hills. So it's a really nice place to visit. There's loads of things to do to keep you entertained. You'll have a great time, and maybe you'll see someone I know there too. See ya.
So hi, I'm Jernier, and from Manila in the Philippines. So this is my bit for Travels Inside Podland, and I'll be talking about the city of Manila, or as we call it in our local language, Maynila. There. So when's the best time to visit and why? I would actually recommend around the time of April. Why is that? But because number one, it's what us Catholics would call as the Holy Week. So there's a lot of religious activity ongoing. It would give you a great insight as to the culture of the Filipino people, especially how it mixes with Catholic tradition. You will also have a wonderful opportunity to go around the different churches in and around Manila, actually, which are actually beautiful works of art. And another good reason for that is you can also do it as a back-to-back with the Malaysian Grand Prix in Sepang, which is around, I think, it's either the last week of March or the first week of April. So it's a good idea to do a back-to-back because Manila is only around 2 hours away from Kuala Lumpur. If you're also interested, it's also okay, I guess, to go around September, before or after Singapore, although it is the rainy season. So it's a bit more difficult to go around Manila at that time. So as for local music, food, and festivals, so as I was mentioning earlier, there is a lot of stuff going on here in the summer in particular. So you have the Holy Week, you have also what we call fiestas or barrio fiestas, which are basically celebrations of a town's patron saint. The thing is, it's not so common in Manila because it's a city, but if you go out of Manila, usually most towns within an hour or two from Manila would have the most wonderful festivals that you can visit. These are not your usual rocker type festivals. These are more of those that maintain a certain sense of tranquility or a certain sense of tradition, because these festivals have been going on for many decades or even centuries. The local music here is actually very similar, or very westernized, very similar to what you see in the US or in the UK, although in recent times there's also been certain level of Korean influence. Don't ask me why. Local food is also very excellent, especially just outside Manila. I would personally recommend that you eat Bicol Express, which is a very tasty, very spicy dish named after the Bicol Express train. Other local food that you can try out, there's lots. We have adobo, we have sinigang, we have, you name it, we probably have something. If you're also familiar with the world-famous balut egg, which is basically a cooked... Well, I won't go into details. Just look it up. The most underrated touristy thing not to miss. This is actually a difficult one, but I would suggest, if you are the shopping type, I would suggest you go to the area we call Divisoria, specifically the area we would call 168. It's named that because it's a lucky set of numbers in Chinese, if you say it in Chinese. The reason is there are... they sell many different kinds of items there at rock bottom prices. And when I say rock bottom, it's usually around half a pound or even less. And these are items that you would usually find outside in other malls. You would usually find them at around 2 or 3 pounds. And in here, you find it at less than a pound. So if you're really after big bargains, that is usually the place to go. The most overrated touristy thing to take a pass on, well, it's very tricky because almost everything here is worth a visit, worth a pass. But I guess if there's one place, it would probably be the Mall of Asia, which is touted as the largest mall in Asia and I believe the second or the third largest in the world. The reason you would take a pass for that is, well, it is very, very big. It is also very, very difficult to go around. There's only two floors, an upper and a lower floor. So it's spread out over a very large space. So if you want to go from one side of the mall to the other, it'll take you a very long time, something in the region of probably 15, 20 minutes on a slow pace or a slow walk. So you could probably take a pass on that. You can look for bargains in other places or in other malls. Perhaps other things I could add, if there are certain places that you would want to go, the best way to do it, probably to experience the culture, is via the jeepney if it's available for your local route. Just be careful, of course, of your belongings as always. In terms of accommodation, it's not very expensive. Usually, if you're looking for a good, decent hotel, it's something in the range of probably a good standard hotel is around £50 a night. Do I have my math correct? Yes, £50 a night. Backpacker hotels usually cost half the price or even less than that. So there you go. That's a quick go around of Manila here in the Philippines. Hope to see you sometime. I believe Basano is planning a side pod meetup in Manila, probably sometime next year or the year after that. So if you're interested, just let either of us know. Okay, that's it. Thank you very much, guys. Hope to hear from you soon. Bye.
We're heading west across Asia now to the European continent.
My name is Annie Ray, and I'm from France. The best time to visit is probably the summertime.
What's a very cool thing that people should see when they go to visit France in the summer?
Well, of course, most people would say Paris. Best thing to do in France is not to follow the highway and not to go to the tourist spot. I think that the best thing is, you can get your GPS now, your TomTom or whatever, Garmin, and it's to tell it to take you to different places, but away from the highways. Mm-hmm. This way, little hometown, and it's beautiful to go there. It's to go through all of those little town and go buy your bread, your milk, and make your own sandwiches, and it's awesome. And people are fairly friendly, so you can come, stop at the bar, and then you get to meet the locals. And, there is lots of castles everywhere. You don't have to plan. You will find castles to visit wherever you go. I mean, most people would say you go to the Loire Valley, but anywhere in France you will be able to find, from the very small to the most popular tourist spot. But I think even if you go to the smaller ones, it's even the most touristic from my point of view.
Where are you from exactly in France?
I'm from, it's called, like we have regions, mm-hmm. So it's called the Auvergne regions, and it's right from the center of France. So if you were to choose exactly the center of France, that's where I come from. But the village where I come from is called Saint-Bonnet-Prairion. It's a very small village. There is about maybe 1,500 people live there. And so it's a fairly small village, and that's where I come from. But I was born in Clermont-Ferrand. Clermont-Ferrand is a little bit bigger town. Mm. It's old volcanoes, like it's not like the Rocky Mountains, nothing like it. But it's really nice, low mountains that you can climb. And actually, the Tour de France goes there quite a bit over the years.
Excellent. And we were talking before we started the interview about another sporting event that used to take place in hometown. Can you tell us a bit about that?
In the backyard. It's actually at the foot of the biggest mountain, which is called the Puy de Dôme. And it's called the Circuit de Charade. It's at Clermont-Ferrand. And the Circuit de Charade is, has been used for many, many years. And I don't know, the Formula One, and then now I think Formula 3, like we just saw on the web.
So, we did a little research and discovered that the Circuit Charade was in use for the French Grand Prix in 65, 69, 70, and 72.
Yeah, and I was there for all of them. But I do remember because it was a big thing, you know. And the big thing about the Circuit Charade is that you may not know, but Clermont-Ferrand is also the central place for Michelin. They actually basically own the town of Clermont-Ferrand. And, they have their own racing track where they test tires. So there is a lot of interest around cars and tires in that town. It's all about cars, in fact. If you go to Clermont-Ferrand, everybody is crazy about cars and tires and all the things associated with it.
I know you're a big fan of traveling. Where are you planning on heading next?
Well, I don't know. We haven't decided yet, but last year we went to the Amazon River, so a cruise in the Amazon, so that was pretty cool. We are planning to go back to France, actually, in next summer. If we go back to France, one of the things that I'd like to do soon, I don't know, is to actually go and see, my husband is from Italy, and he's on the border with France, on the French Riviera, the Côte d'Azur. It's about an hour drive from Monte Carlo and Monaco, so going to see the Grand Prix and it's really exciting. We have some very good friends that have a restaurant that's right beside the track.
So, oh, wow.
Yeah, so that would be pretty cool to go at that time of year.
Could you watch it right from the restaurant?
Yes, you can, yes. Well, you have to go on top, but yes, it gets pretty crazy during the Grand Prix.
I can imagine.
Yeah.
Well, excellent. I will have to interview you if you ever get to the Monaco Grand Prix.
Yeah, when I come back.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks, Annie.
You're welcome.
Okay, so I'm hoping that Annie takes me with her when she goes.
Second part of my sideboard travel series has to be Denmark. Why am I doing the whole country? Well, it's quite a small country and you can drive around a lot, so I won't do the whole thing. If you're living in the UK or most European cities, you could probably get a cheap flight with EasyJet to Copenhagen. And from there on, you take a short train trip into town to half an hour and you're in lovely Copenhagen. Well, so what to do in Copenhagen? Well, a lot of the touristy things you can do are you can walk around town. There's a lovely shopping street called Strøget, which is basically very, very long, wide promenade with loads of nice shops and cafes, and there's some artwork. And one of the cool things you can do actually is there's a Royal Copenhagen shop which sells basically decorated china. And why would that be interesting, would you ask? Well, if you go to the top floor of that shop, you can go to the museum. In the museum, it's got some old crockery and other things, but what we really liked was around the back was a lady painting the plates, and we got to have a great big chat with her about how she makes her plates, like the artwork involved, and how she has to paint to a pattern, and we were watching her while she was doing it, which I thought was really awesome, and it was completely free. Copenhagen is really easy to get around. You can go around by bike. The bikes cost 20 kroner if you don't have one for yourself, although they're a little bit stiff, but they're pretty good. You could go to Nyhavn. Nyhavn used to be a place like the red light district, but it's not that anymore. It's where Hans Christian Andersen used to live as well. It's full of lovely touristy pubs and things, and it's often where I hang out for a drink when I'm going out with my workmates on Friday. It's got some nice pubs and things. Straight up from there is Kongens Nytorv, which is like a great big circular square with a garden in the middle, and it's got some nice places for pictures, and you can have a look around there. There's always something going on, like a parade or some art stuff or things like that. And you can also take a bus trip around town. It's very cheap. It's one of those hop-on, hop-off things. You can have a guided tour around, see some of the sites, because Copenhagen is quite an old town. Most of the buildings are hundreds of years old, so there's quite a lot of history and good architecture if you like that sort of thing. You can also combine it with a boat tour where it goes around the sea parts of Copenhagen because it's sort of on the water. That's really lovely as well. You may even pass by my work at some point. It's a big building near the Little Mermaid, but I won't say any more for that. The Little Mermaid itself, she's quite small and diminutive, but most people want to have a look at her. I don't think she's actually there at the moment. I think she's on holiday in China. I'm not quite sure why, but to be honest, you're not missing much. I don't particularly think she's that brilliant. What else can you see? Oh, of course, the Royal Palace. The Queen lives in Copenhagen, of course. She lives actually 10 minutes walk from my work, which is quite interesting because when it was her birthday, we all went down to see her and there was a big crowd in the square, and she stood on a balcony and we said, hurrah, hurrah, and she's waving to us. It's quite cool because it was like she was almost in touching distance. The palace itself is quite old and there's some quite nice old buildings around it, a few hundred years old and stuff. Definitely worth having a look. And it's just, if you like that sort of thing, it's quite cool. There's a Viking museum just outside of Copenhagen, a place called Roskilde. It's not far out of town by train. I like Viking stuff, so that's my cup of tea. In Copenhagen itself, of course, there's some nice bars and restaurants and things. It's a little bit more pricey, but there's some cool things like this. The Ice Bar, Australian pub, there's some good Asian restaurants, fantastic sushi. But if you're on a bit of a budget, you can go to any of the sausage wagons around town, really cheap, and yummy hot dog. Yummy hot dogs are fantastic. I think I live off those things. They're just brilliant. And if you're really feeling adventurous and you've got some time left, you can go up north to a place called Helsingør, or Elsinore in English, where you can see the castle that Hamlet was filmed at. So you sing a bit of Shakespeare there too. It's quite a beautiful castle as well, so it's really, really nice. I think that's about it. There's quite a lot more things to do, but Copenhagen is one of those places where you sort of see stuff as you're doing it, not really many more like landmarks and stuff, but it's a really awesome city. It's full of life and culture, and you can get by really easily because even though it's Danish, there's a lot of internationals, and Danish people are really good at speaking English, so it's really easy to get by if you need help. And that reminds me of one more thing you must see in Copenhagen is an amusement park called Tivoli. It's right near the railway station. It's awesome. It's basically a Victorian garden mixed with a theme park. It's got some brilliant rides. It's got the Demon roller coaster. It's got a big wheel, Ferris wheel. It's got one of those things where you sit on a chair and it takes you up vertically up and then drops you like a lift that's broken, and that absolutely was horrible. I think my stomach came out of my mouth at that point. I love the roller coaster. It was cool. And you can get some big balloons, play some silly games. There's dodgem cars if you want to be Juan Pablo Montoya or Nelson Piquet Jr. You can take out your frustrations in the dodgem cars. And you can get loads of things in there. It's one of those places where it's just great to hang out and just do some fun things. And it's quite a nice place to go if you've got a family or a couple or you just want to have a bit of a laugh. So yeah, so that was my tour of Copenhagen. So if you guys ever feel like visiting, just give me a call and I'll give you a good tour around. We can have a pint together. So yeah, that's my tour. See you later.
Next, we're heading across the English Channel now to hear from several SidePod folk in the UK.
Hi, I'm Alex Andronov from Sofa F1, and I'm going to guide you through my hometown of London. On this very day in history, the 20th of September 1777, James Boswell was worried. He had been visiting London from Scotland, as he had several times previously. He had enjoyed his visit so much that he was considering moving to London. But what, he fretted, would that mean for his impression of London? He loved to visit London, but would it be less exciting to live there? He decided to ask his good friend Samuel Johnson, creator of the first English dictionary, for advice, and this is what he replied. "Why, sir, you'll find no man at all intellectual who is willing to leave London. No, sir, when a man is tired of London, he is tired of life, for there is in London all that life can afford." And he's right, to my mind. I've travelled quite a bit, I've been places, I've seen things, and London has got it all. A great big melting pot. All of life is here, as they say. I would say that the best time to visit London is when the weather is good. Sorry to be such a pain, but that's the big problem with London, well, Britain in general. We have such hard-to-predict weather. It rains a lot. On a bright summer's day, London is pretty beyond belief. On a bright winter's day, you'll want to stop into an old-fashioned pub, pull up in front of a fire, and drink a glass of foaming twig-related beer. But when the cloud is low and the rain is lashing down, the grey stone and the grey rain can make things seem a little grey. As far as attractions go, I do love the London Eye. It's not scary to go up, even if you're scared of heights, because it moves very slowly and you can stay in the middle. I'm not sure what the most overrated attraction in London is, possibly Madame Tussauds, but then I've never quite seen the attraction of Waxworks. So that's it, that's London, the greatest city on earth. And I was Alex Andronov from Sofa F1.
Welcome to Dewsbury. My name is Startle Bunny and I live here. According to the press, Dewsbury is a town that dare not speak its name. If you've been watching the news in the last few years, you'd know why. By car, Dewsbury is southwest of the M1 and M62 junction. By train, you would have to travel to Leeds or Huddersfield first before getting here. By flight, maybe you'd arrive at Leeds Bradford, Robin Hood at a push, or Manchester Airport before a road or train journey was necessary. As for things to do in Dewsbury, there isn't much in the way of attractions. For the bargain hunters amongst you, there's the market. If you want a bit of quiet, there's Crowness Park, complete with a museum. If you're into churches, there's the Minster. For dining out, my personal favourite is the Yorkshire Pudding over in Murfield. For something more extravagant, there's the 3 Acres. It's a good few miles out of Dewsbury, in Shelley. Every year at summertime, part of Dewsbury town centre is turned into a seaside resort, complete with beach for one day. The town is called Dewsbury-on-Sea. I don't know why, I don't know how, it just is. For hotels, there's a Holiday Inn over in Ossett, or there's a Premier Inn near Brig House. For absolute luxury, there's the Waterton Park Hotel, which is situated on a small island in the middle of a lake, and that one's at the outskirts of Wakefield. If you get bored, you can always visit the surrounding towns and cities, Huddersfield, Leeds, Bradford, and Wakefield. Coming back to things to do, here are 4 places I recommend you to visit in this area. Castle Hill, overlooking Huddersfield, the National Media Museum in Bradford, Temple Newsham on the outskirts of Leeds, and Sandal Castle in Wakefield. Well, thank you for listening and enjoy the rest of your travels.
Hi Nicky, hi Startle Bunny. I promised I'd do you a bit on Scotland for travels in Sidepod land, so try this for size. Everyone should be coming to Scotland. Regardless what the American politicians say, forget about them. We have things here that you don't get anywhere else in the world, and we get things put together in different ways as well. We get Loch Ness. Come here, bring a camera, get a picture of the monster, prove it exists, you're famous forever. Where else can you go and do that? You never need to work again. You'd be spend the rest of your life getting chauffeur-driven limousines round TV studios doing interviews. You can sell pictures of anything you ever take again. While you're up in that area, we've got mountains. If you're up in the summer, go for a walk. If you're there in the winter, go skiing. Unless you're from Middlesex. If you're from Middlesex, stay away from the mountains. Every time there's a news report where someone gets hurt, or lost, or killed in the mountains, they're from Middlesex. So if you're from Middlesex, stay away from the mountains. Dangerous. Bad. Once you're bored of the mountains, which, you know, it's going to take a while, but you will do eventually, you can go to the seaside, and the beauty of Scotland is, although there's lots of land, the shape of it means that you're never more than 40 miles from the sea. So, get in your car, an hour from the mountains, you're at the seaside. Where else can you do that? It's fabulous. But now you'd be wanting a drink. Park the car, get in a bus. Couldn't be simpler. There are buses which take you around the whiskey trail, as it's called. So you can do one day of this, you can do 10 days of this. There's hundreds of distilleries. You go, you get a tour of the distillery, you learn a little bit of the history of it, how the whiskey making started, how they do it, what they do, they show you around the processes, all the nice shiny coppery bits, all the other smelly bits. But at the end of it, they give you free whiskey. You come to the home of whiskey, they give it for free. Once you've had that, you go and drive 2-3 miles up the road, quick look around another distillery and where they grow stuff for it and where the water comes from. Take you to another distillery, more free alcohol. They literally feed you free alcohol all day for the cost of a little bus trip. What more do you want? You want scenery? Go to Loch Lomond. Scenery is incredible. There's been songs written about it. Famous songs. You got the loch, which on a still day is just fabulous. You got little boats out in the loch. You get islands in the loch. You got mountains behind it. On a still day, you get the picture of the mountains in that, in the loch. Take a camera, you get the best picture, postcard pictures anywhere in the world there. You want to go to a city? Go to Glasgow. It used to be an old, grotty industrial city, but that was a long time ago. Now they've spent a fortune on it. It's been European City of Culture. It's got some of the best shopping in Europe, and it's got some of the greatest concert venues. Doesn't matter if you want classical music, pop music, any kind of music. It does them all. All the biggest acts in the world go there, and they all say, without fail, that the best response they get from any crowd in the world is Glasgow. The people in Glasgow are just different. You want sports? It's Glasgow. What more do you want? You want history now, don't you? You really want a bit of history? Go to Edinburgh. You've got an ancient city. It's got everything you want in an ancient city, except it's fairly compact so you don't get lost and you don't get knackered walking around it. It's got a huge castle up on a rock, like you see in the movies. Just if you're near the castle at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, fingers and ears, because they've got a huge cannon up there that they set off 1 o'clock every day so that everyone knows the time. All the locals know it. All the tourists end up going deaf and getting tinnitus in their ears. You don't want to be doing that. There's loads of historical stuff on the surface, but you can actually go and do a tour underground and look at some of the streets from the city that were buried at the time of the plague. They've been dug up now, and you can go through and you can actually see shops as they were then, houses as they were then. It's a fascinating place to go. Doesn't matter what kind of tourism you want, doesn't matter what you want to see, come to Scotland, it's got everything.
From the UK, we head to South America.
Hi, this is Guiche from Argentina. And I'd like to tell you about Bariloche, the city where I've been living for the last 7 years. First, a little bit of background information. Bariloche is a medium-sized city, located something like 1,600 kilometers to the southwest of Buenos Aires. It's at the feet of the Andean Range, and at the shore of a big lake, the Lake Nahuel Huapi. So you can picture that in your mind and imagine big mountains, a nice lake, great landscapes and a lot of outdoor activities to do. Bariloche is a touristic city, so you probably heard the name before. We have two high seasons. First, we have winter. In Bariloche, there is the biggest ski center in Latin America. It's a 2,000 meters mountain called Cerro Catedral, with something like 30 lifts that allow you to ski basically the whole mountain from top to bottom. The snow is not perfect. You should expect spring snow basically all the season, except after the big snowfalls when the snow is great. But the best thing about this ski center are the views. You can just stop in the middle of the snow and you look down and you see the lakes and the mountains in the back, and all the rivers, and it's a pretty amazing landscape to ski. Even if you don't ski, it's a really nice place to go up the mountain and just enjoy the view. The other high season is summer. Bariloche is in the middle of the National Park Nahuel Huapi, and we have plenty of outdoor activities to do in summer. You can go hiking basically through all the park. You have one day walks, one afternoon walks, or you can go out for a weekend, or you can just lose yourself in the mountain for a week. In every single path, the views are amazing, especially in the middle of the summer and the beginning of autumn, when all the trees start to change color. It's just amazing. The best time to come in summer is the beginning of February, when the days are really long and the probability of rains is low. And if you're lucky enough, the lake will have increased its temperature to something like 15 degrees centigrade, and you can take a swim in it. Well, of course, Bariloche is much more than this short description. I won't pretend to describe the whole place in just a few minutes, especially because it's not only the city that you have, but also a lot of beautiful places 1 hour, 2 hour drives from here. I guess the best way to know this place is just to come down here and enjoy the city and the surroundings. So I hope to see you here. Bye.
Our last stop is Edmonton, Alberta, Canada.
This is my home, and I think you should come visit. The best time to come is late July, August, because one of the must-sees in Edmonton is the summer festival season. We have one of the biggest fringe theater festivals in the world, with 2 weeks of independent theater, improv, and street performances. We also have the IRL's Edmonton Indie, usually at the end of July. Some of the less time-sensitive things to see are our museum and Old Strathcona. The Royal Alberta Museum is quite small, well, teeny, when compared with New York, London, or Paris, but what I think is unmissable is the Syncrude Gallery of Aboriginal Culture. It's one of the largest, most in-depth exhibits in North America, spanning 11,000 years, and carefully planned and executed in close cooperation and consultation with Alberta's First Nation people. The first time I saw it, I was moved to tears. Old Strathcona is full of little shops during the day and lots of pubs during the evening, so it's a great place to hang out and people watch. Also, our hostel is right in the middle of this busy neighborhood. And I suppose if you're here, you ought to hit the world's largest shopping mall, West Edmonton Mall. It really does have an indoor amusement park, water park, including a bungee jump, submarine rides, and an 18-hole mini golf course, all inside. It's kind of fun to try it all once, but to be honest, if I need to shop, I go elsewhere. It's pretty intolerable for a leisurely mall day. The other thing that out-of-towners have commented on is how much nature is contained within the city limits of Edmonton. The North Saskatchewan River bisects the city from the northeast to the southwest, and Edmonton's River Valley Trail system rivals many hiking trails up in the middle of nowhere. The thing I like about Edmonton is how it mixes the metropolitan with the natural, and in the summer I like the fact that it's light until 11 p.m. You don't even have to juggle watching Formula One races with sightseeing when you come. Most races air at about 4:30 a.m. here, leaving your whole day untouched to fill with activities. That's it for Travels Inside Podland. I hope you've enjoyed our little trip around the world and the chance to meet some side pod folk. Thanks also to
Zaini,
Gavin,
Journeyer,
Annie Ray,
Alex Andronoff,
Startle Bunny,
Stephen Roy,
Gishev,
for their travel contributions. Thanks for listening.